We begin a brand new series this week called Greater Than. Greater Than. Now, I was just a C student in math, but this is one math symbol I could understand. A math text tells me that the greater than symbol is a basic math symbol, which is used to represent the inequality between two values, right? One is greater than the other. Greater than, something more, of superior worth, of better quality, of greater value, right? Five is greater than two. Right? Two cookies is greater than one. I found a place selling t-shirts online that you could get a shirt claiming that dogs were greater than people, or that books were greater than reality, or that food was greater than work. Right? You could have some fun with this greater than equation. Think about some of the following. Chocolate is greater than, how would you fill that in? Right? Blank is greater than ice cream. Or how about this one? Is fishing greater than, less than, or equal to shopping? How about cats to dogs? In these parts, baseball season's getting ready to start, the Kansas City Royals or the St. Louis Cardinals. Well, how about this one? Jesus is greater than what? How would you fill that in? I was curious, so I fired up my Logos Bible software this week, did a little word search, and found that the phrase greater than appears 38 times in the NIV Bible, 40 times in the English Standard Version, and it's split almost equally between the Old and New Testaments. For example, in Genesis 48, Joseph takes his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, to be blessed by his father Jacob. And Jacob begins to offer the firstborn blessing to the youngest, Ephraim, instead of the firstborn Manasseh, and Joseph, thinking that this is a mistake, tries to correct his father, but Jacob knows exactly what he's doing, saying that the younger brother will be greater than the oldest. In 1 Kings 1:37, it is said that Solomon's throne will be greater than his father David's. In 2 Chronicles 2:5, Solomon wants to build a great temple for God because, as he explains, God is greater than all other gods. And that's a claim that's made multiple times in Scripture. God is greater than all other gods. In Matthew 11:11, Jesus says that even the least of those in the kingdom of heaven will be greater than John the Baptist. And in Mark 12:31, Jesus tells us that there are no commandments greater than, well, the commandments to love God and to love people. And elderly apostle John assures us in 1 John 4:4 that the one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world. In fact, there are a number of truths and realities that the Bible affirms are greater than what the world tries to sell us. In fact, let's be honest, right? Does the world even have a clue of what things are really worth? I mean, was Bitcoin ever really worth $20,000? On February 16th of last year, an artist known as Beeple sold a digital collage of 5,000 pictures and doodles, many of them offensive. And it exists only online, and it sold for $69 million. Right? Is that really worth more than, say, a Rembrandt? Is a $20 roll of Renova toilet paper really worth more than a whole pack of Charmin Ultra? Or how about gold-plated staples for $175, or a Louis Vuitton skateboard for $8,000, or check this out. You can get your very own carbon fiber toilet seat for $249. All right. Nothing like going in style. And then celebrities, those stars of towering intellect who influence culture and shape the direction of public opinion, right? They do public service announcements and they post on Twitter, you know, telling us what to think. How would they know if one thing is greater than another thing? I mean, Beyonce spent $100,000 on gold leggings. Nicolas Cage spent $275,000 on a dinosaur skull that he had to return to Mongolia because it was stolen. Paris Hilton bought a doghouse for $300,000. That's $100,000 in my own house. Mike Tyson spent $2.3 million on a gold bathtub. Bono, the singer for U2, spent $1,500 on a first-class plane ticket for his hat. All right, didn't want to check it into luggage. Why would we listen to anything these people have to tell us? But the problem is, they're not alone. Somebody on Reddit asked the question, what's the dumbest purchase you've made? And the thread just blew up with thousands and thousands of people confessing their own brain dead purchases. For instance, somebody sent their boyfriend out to buy some vegetables for dinner. He comes back with a kayak. No vegetables. He forgot those, but they've never used the kayak. One guy bought a $2,000 double neck guitar that he never learned how to play. One lady traded a rather rare book at a used bookstore because she had two copies. And then a month later, she goes back and she buys that same book back from the store because it was a rare book and she forgot that she had a second copy. But I'm sure if you're watching this, that you have never paid the stupid tax, right? For something that you should have just walked away from. Imagine that you go into a store. And one day someone had switched all the price tags around. Somebody hacked the computer system and it was scanning items for ridiculous amounts. I remember one time I had gotten a message online that some albums were selling for like $1 at Walmart. And so I hurried to my local Walmart and found one of those albums and I ran it through the little scanner that you can do yourself. And sure enough, $1. Right? Well, imagine if it was like that throughout the whole store. $1,000 appliances are selling for $1. $3 tubes of toothpaste, though, are going for $3,000. $5,000 handbags are going for 50 cents, but you go to the gumball machine and they've installed a credit card reader because that stale old gumball is going to set you back $375. Now, something like this actually happened, you know, years ago, back when they actually put price tags on each item. Some pranksters had broken into the store in the middle of the night, right? They didn't rob the safe. They didn't steal anything. They simply switched around all of the price tags. And of course, the results the next morning were pure chaos. But this is exactly what Satan has done in our world. Right? He has switched all the price tags. He has convinced us to value the wrong things. Right? And we take what deserves to be handled with great care. And we treat it as though it has little value. And then we turn around and we make great sacrifices to pursue things that last only a fleeting moment. We have forgotten the things that are greater than. We will work long hours sacrificing the few years that we have our young children with us. We will throw away years invested in a marriage for a few moments of pleasure. And we throw away our integrity in pursuit of fleeting feelings that fade in a moment. And we place such high value on our bodies, but have no regard for our souls. Right? Satan has changed all the price tags. And it's more than just a harmless prank, but a deadly deception with eternal consequences. Now, I don't know about you, but all of this can make it hard for me to keep my own head straight about which things are greater than others. Right? Sometimes I can't tell the difference between trinkets and treasure. I mean, why would I, pass up on gold and diamonds to clutch plastic Mardi Gras beads? But we do. So over the next 10 weeks, we're going to talk about which things are truly greater than. Right? We're going to put the price tags back where they belong. Right? And the things that the world says lead to happiness, we're going to discover they really don't. It's like spending way too much on a product that cannot deliver what it advertises. And so we're going to look at 10 spiritual greater than equations that equal true joy. And when you don't understand these 10 things that truly are greater than their worldly alternatives, then you will know what is of true value and you can find lasting joy. Now, this morning, this message serves just as an introduction to the whole series. It explains what we're going to be doing and why. So let me just briefly explain the idea behind this series and where it came from. And then I want to walk us through the process that we're going to be going through over these next few weeks and the biblical principle behind it. Now, there's an app that I use. It's called Evernote, and it's a cloud-based note-taking, record-keeping, an organizational app. And I use this app for some ordinary things like organizing my receipts. Mostly, though, I started using Evernote to organize, tag, track, and store my sermon illustrations. Good stories, funny jokes, important statistics, insightful articles, great quotes. Anytime I run across something good, I put it in Evernote. Right? I tag it, I title it, and then I can search for it and use it later. And then I can also mark, hey, I use this at this date for this purpose. I also have an Evernote file for sermon ideas and lesson ideas. So if I wake up in the middle of the night with a brilliant idea, I could quickly put it in Evernote and I won't forget about it in the morning. Now, sometimes these things begin as a simple concept or a theme or just a catchy title. But as time goes on, once I've got an idea started, I can add more things to it as I think of them or come across books or articles that relate, and I build these things up and I put flesh on the bones until I'm ready to put it into use. Well, one of these concepts that came to me, it's probably been bouncing around in my Evernote for a couple of years now, but it was called greater than. And my original idea was to do a series on grace. And here we're going to be the 7 sermon topics. Grace is greater than your sin. Grace is greater than your status. Grace is greater than your fear, your doubt, your past, your hurt, and even your success. And I still think that would be a great 7-part series, and I may still use it someday. But as I was building on this idea and researching it, I came across an interview with an author that wrote this book here, The Happy Christian, 10 Ways to Be a Joyful Believer in a Gloomy World. And he talks in here about 10 biblical formulas that lead to a more joyful life. Ordinarily, it's the kind of thing I wouldn't touch, but his story intrigued me, and I found the biblical content both compelling and relevant. So here we are. Now, the author's name is David Murray. He's a Bible college professor. He's a pastor. He's a theology nerd. And he made maybe a bit of a name for himself several years ago when he wrote a book called Christians Get Depressed Too. This book really helped a lot of believers who struggled with depression to be more open about their struggles and to help them understand that it doesn't mean that they're a bad Christian. And he challenged the church to minister to these people in a more loving and understanding way. And because of that book, he likes to joke that he became known as Mr. Depression, not quite what you want to be known for. So a few years later, Murray was reading the New York Times bestselling book, The Happiness Project. You may have heard of this book, but it follows the work of several positive psychologists who are attempting to research happiness from a purely scientific perspective. Traditional psychology focuses on, well, the negative, right? Why are people so unhappy and what can we do to help them? But positive psychologists who become known as happy scientists, they asked a question differently. What makes people happy and how can we help them flourish? And then they proceeded to study, well, the happiest people they could find. And they made some fascinating and helpful discoveries. But Murray, in reading this, thought, you know, surely Christians can do better. After all, we have the ultimate truth that leads to far greater joy. And so as he explored that idea, he developed these 10 biblical equations that lead to greater joy. If we do our spiritual math correctly, we will live more fulfilled lives. Now, these spiritual calculations, however, they require a change in our thinking. So I want to take you through a biblical process, a way of thinking differently that can make a difference in nearly any area of your life that you apply it. And the process is basically this: where your mind goes, your life will follow. We begin with Romans 12:2. Our thinking leads our lives. And here's what Romans 12:2 says. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is good, pleasing, and perfect will. Our thinking has to be changed. Paul says here, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Right? Change in thinking leads to changed lives. And the Greek word that Paul uses here for transformed is the same word from which we get metamorphosis. Right? The changing of your mind transforms your life. It metamorphosizes your life. And this is something that has to take place because our lives have been conformed to the pattern of this world, right? We're living as caterpillars even when we've been meant to be butterflies. Over the last few years, my girls have had this running joke going with their uncle, my wife's youngest brother. They had this running joke going over cat butts, right? So each Christmas, there's been this exchange of pictures and coloring books all themed around the hindquarters of the feline species. Well, so this year, my wife purchases these cat butt cookie cutters so that they could make cat butt-shaped Christmas cookies, and they could send them to their Uncle Tim with some maybe strategically placed Hershey Kisses. Now, this is all for fun and laughs, but imagine that this world has a cookie cutter that tries to force you into its shape. A literal translation of this part of this verse is, do not let the world press you into its mold. This was the word that the Greeks would use when minting a coin. You would hammer a bit of molten metal, all right, with a hammer that has the embossed image of the emperor on it. Well, the world is the hammer and your life is the molten metal. And Satan swings that hammer to pound his image into your life. And the only way to resist this conformity in your life is to change your thinking to transform your life. Notice in this verse that you can't just change your thinking on your own. You can't transform your own life. It is written in the passive voice. This is something that happens to you, right? something or someone else renews your mind, and then that transforms your life. And so this is where modern psychology and therapy are insufficient to our need. This transformation is something that someone has to do for us. Remember, you were created in the image of God. You are being renewed in the image of Jesus Christ. It's not something we accomplish on our own. Now, next, we go to 2 Corinthians 10. Paul here is defending his ministry from accusations, and he makes the point that behind these personal attacks on his life, it's really a spiritual battle. And so Paul says, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons that we fight with are not the weapons of the world. Right? Paul's saying this is a different kind of battle. It is a war for our minds. It is a battle over how we think. And in 2 Corinthians 10:5, Paul says this, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. Now, whose thoughts is he talking about here? Right? His own. He is fighting to take his own thoughts captive. Right? Satan has declared war on our minds. There are open hostilities against the way you think. Over the last couple of weeks, we've seen some horrific images come out of Ukraine. Right? Bombed out buildings, long lines of shuffling refugees, burned out vehicles, both military and civilian, rockets streaking the skies, and skylines dominated by pillars of smoke rather than tall buildings. But imagine that such images are an expression of what's going on in the folds of your gray matter. Right? You are fighting for a mind that can recognize the truth and hold on to the truth and has the ability to think for itself, to think freely, and the discernment to quickly recognize the difference between right and what's wrong. Right? But there are landmines, there are ambushes, there are flank attacks. You know, you're being constantly bombarded. The battle for our minds is so fierce that we have to take our own thoughts captive. Our own thoughts lead us astray. My thoughts lead me astray, right? My thoughts betray me all the time. I mean, I'm doing good. I'm in the Word. I'm living in obedience. And then boom, I have this stray thought that takes me in a dangerous direction, right? And if I don't immediately defeat it and take that thought captive, it will undo me. Our minds are prone to wander. So we must learn to take our thinking captive. And this is a huge struggle. Most of us, we want to follow our thoughts wherever they lead us. We don't want to confront our own thinking. We don't want to tell ourselves that we're wrong. And the world encourages us. You know, the world says, hey, you do you. But God says in Proverbs 14, 12, there is a way that seems right to a man, but in the end, it is the way to death. And your thoughts will be constantly trying to lead you down that way to death unless you're willing to take those thoughts captive and control your thinking. Next, we move to Philippians 4, 8, which gives us at least a hint at a strategy for how we can go about renewing our minds and maybe, you know, taking our thoughts captive and ultimately transforming our life. Here's what Paul tells the Philippians, and he tells you and I. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Fix your mind, set your mind on these things. We have the power to direct our thinking. Our thoughts follow what we set our minds on. Have you ever been driving somewhere, right, and you're trying to follow the directions on your Google Maps or your Apple Maps, and all of a sudden everything goes haywire? Right? Your GPS starts acting wonky. It tells you to turn left, so you turn left. And then all of a sudden it says, make a U-turn, right? And the little car in the center of your screen starts spinning wildly about, and you don't know where you're going. Maybe you're downtown in the middle of the tall buildings in a big city, and your GPS cannot connect with the satellites. Or maybe it's just quit working. Your GPS has lost calibration, and so you have to recalibrate. Maybe you've done that thing where you have to like move your phone in a figure eight. Well, sometimes our minds lose their calibration. We lose our ability to navigate life. We confuse lies for the truth. Our thinking gets all messed up. So we have to recalibrate our thinking. We have to reset the true north of our internal compass. And scripture says we do this by setting our minds on the right things, right? And that's what Paul's saying here. You've got to find those right things, things that are true, things that are honorable, just, pure, lovely. Focus on those, right? And that recalibrates your thinking. Then you will know. So imagine in your brain that there is a target reticle, you know, crosshairs that sets your thinking on a certain thing. Now, as you imagine that, let me ask you a question. What are the crosshairs of your mind set on right now in your life? Really? When you set your thinking on the right things, the truth becomes more clear, the right decisions become more obvious. The further away, though, from these things that we get, the crazier everything becomes. The right decision becomes, well, clear as mud. Our internal compass starts spinning wildly. Back when I was studying computer programming, there was an expression we used, GIGO, which stands for garbage in, garbage out. You see, computers don't do what you want them to do. They do exactly what you tell them to do. And this was a challenge to us to be, well, very careful in our programming, you know, triple check your formulas and your commands so that you know that the computer is doing proper calculations. The same thing happens in our thinking, right? We might want certain results in our lives. You know, we want this kind of life, but our life always follows our thinking. And if our thinking is set on the wrong things, then our lives will always end up in the wrong place, no matter how much we wish it was different. And so we have to change our thinking if we want to change our lives. So that's what we're going to be doing over the next 2 weeks. We will be refocusing our minds, fixing our thoughts on the biblical truths that are greater than what the world tells us. But for any of this to help, you must first recognize that there is some thinking in your life, well, that needs to change. You've got to be honest about where the crosshairs of your thinking are actually targeted. Some of your basic assumptions about life are misplaced, right? Your spiritual math is all wrong. Perhaps our first greater than should be this. What God says is greater than what the world says, right? What God says is greater than what the world says, right? No matter how many voices are saying it, no matter how loud or insistent those voices are, what God says is greater than what the world says, no matter how popular it is. What God says is greater, no matter if Twitter or Facebook take it down because it doesn't fit their agenda. And so we're going to be diving deep into God's word and seeing what it says is greater than, and we are going to set our minds on that. And I hope you're ready for the journey. And I hope you will join me.